And I think many of us have this image in mind that you're either very good at attachment or insecurely attached. And if you're insecurely attached, you're screwed with your adulthood relationships. And you like talk about like, this is actually not the case.
There's actually a very, very low correlation between early childhood attachment style and patterns and adulthood attachment style and patterns. I think that a lot matters and depends on your adult relationships. So people who are insecurely attached are not insecurely attached about everything in a relationship. There are some things they don't really care about. I think though, if you could just have partners and you can have better experiences with partners who are sensitive to those triggers, and you can openly and honestly discuss them with your partner, that can go a really long way. And you can reconfigure these patterns in your life. You really can retrain your brain in really, really beautiful ways.
Hi, and welcome back to the Mind and Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Inka Lant, and want to thank you for being here today with me and my guest. I appreciate your time and aim to bring you real insights and practical tips for wellness in every episode. Today's episode is about unlocking your full human potential, feeling more connected, and having more meaning in life. We talk about the science of human needs and growth with the top expert in this field, Dr. Scott Berry-Kaufman, who is also a good friend of mine. Scott is one of the most kind and insightful humans I know, and he has helped thousands of people to unlock their full human potential and creativity through education, courses, podcasts, and books. He hosts the world's number one psychology podcast and is named one of the 50 groundbreaking scientists who are changing the way we see the world. In 2021, Louis Vuitton selected him as one of the visionaries to express his creativity in a unique exhibition. Oh, and did I mention he also teaches classes on gratitude with Oprah? He has written many best-selling books about psychology and human potential. In this episode, we talk about his book Transcend, which redefines self-actualization and helps people live the most creative, fulfilled, and connected life possible and grow as a person through understanding human needs and accepting all parts of being a human. The book has over 2,000 reviews in Amazon and Goodreads with an average of 4.5 stars out of 5. We discuss Scott's theories and how to feel connected, safe, and cultivate growth in the era of Instagram and pandemics. I do this podcast to spread health and happiness, so if you find this episode inspiring, please share it in your social media or with your friends and family. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube and the Apple Podcast channel of the podcast, and let me know in the YouTube comments what really spoke to you in this episode. I'd really love to hear from you. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Scott Berry-Kaufman, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's great to see you, Inkabeen.
Good to see you too. And so you've been researching all kinds of minds during your professional career, and can you tell a little bit about what kind of research have you done and what has been the most interesting questions for you?
Yeah, that's, I really like the way you put that. I've been really interested in all kinds of minds, just like you said, and people who are neurodiverse and people who are really creative. I spent a large part of my career studying the creative mind and the neuroscience of creativity, and people who are also underdogs, people we kind of write off based on our, like, we predict that they won't do many things very well in their lives, and then they surprise us, you know, and I'm always trying to kind of see what these kind of potentials, how we can, what are the tools of science that we can use to kind of identify some of that untapped potential. So those are some big themes in my life, and self-actualization as well. And I see self-actualization is kind of the core of all of this, kind of like the thread that runs through everything.
Yeah, exactly. So your recent book was called Transcend, and it's one of the most fascinating books I've read, for sure.
Really?
Yes, for sure. It incorporates so much different fields of psychology and fields of all kinds of science. Basically, you integrate, well, it's all based on Maslow's theories, but then you integrate the modern psychology, social humanistic psychology, neuroscience, artificial intelligence, cybernetics, like everything, and create this theory on what it is to transcend. So in your own words, like, what is transcendence?
A lot of people may think of transcendence as something that you just rise above, or you know, something that's a bit more vertical than horizontal. But I view it as a very horizontal thing. So in my definition of transcendence, it really is being able to integrate all that is within you, so that you're a harmonious operating unit, you know, of a human. You don't feel like different sides of you are pulling apart from other sides of you. And it's in the service of realizing the good society and contributing to the world. What you're really transcending there is any one aspect of you. You're not letting it kind of control you, right? So for instance, if fear constantly is causing you to not become your full self and realize your full powers, it's transcending that fear in a way that you integrate it in a really healthy way. So it, you maybe apply that fear to something that contributes to the good society, you know, and or that helps you grow or helps you learn. It doesn't just hold you back completely. You're very good at overcoming fears, Inka. I've seen you, you know, in your life. You know, you do things, get outside your comfort zone. I've always admired that about you.
Well, thank you. And likewise, I think the same from you. So
I try.
Yes. And so what I love about the book is that we all have these kind of fears and doubts and negative sides as well. Or if you can say these are negative, or they're just like part of us. And you talk about the ability to use them in growth. Yeah. Can you tell more about this?
Yeah, in some ways that kind of relates to my other research interests in like the neurodiversity movement. You know, there are a lot of characteristics and traits that we may see with a child on the autism spectrum, or someone with dyslexia, or someone with ADHD, or you know, the million different things we can do to diagnose kids these days. And I think that we often forget there could be some hidden superpowers in some of these kinds of traits and characteristics. People with on the autism spectrum can be incredibly honest and loyal. You know, like people with ADHD, you know, you can have a rich imagination when it comes to things that you're actually interested in, not boring things you have to pay attention to, which are like torture for people with ADHD to do. But we can, you know, there's upside. And there are gifts in lots of these characteristics. And I think it's that's the same with all of us and our emotions and our fears. And, you know, these are just guidelines or they're telling us something about how we're feeling about something, but we don't really have to take it face value. We don't always have to like listen to our emotions. You know, that's a really freeing thing when we realize that we can use all that as information, but we don't have to let us control us.
Yeah, so almost like use that as a source of self-knowledge.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it, Inka.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell a little bit about this model that you built for the self-transcendence? So maybe a little bit about the background, what Maslow was talking about. Many of us are very familiar with the triangle image or representation of how we can grow as human beings. We need certain basic needs to be met. And you tell in this book that actually we don't have to elevate or ascend to the self-actualization, like in a video game, you know, unlocking a level or something like that. So can you tell about this new metaphor that you have come up with?
Oh, sure. So I don't know if all your listeners know of Abraham Maslow. He's a psychologist in the 60s, 50s. He rose to prominence for his work on self-actualization and peak experiences. He has been misrepresented for many, many years by a lot of psychology textbooks, and the kind of way that his theory of motivation, his very seminal theory of motivation, has been misrepresented. So a lot of people will treat it as though it's like a triangle or like a pyramid, and with certain needs like safety needs, connection needs, self-esteem that have to be met to a certain degree before you can go up to the next level, you know, in that kind of metaphor, and before you can, the highest level, self-actualization. But turns out that Maslow never drew a pyramid in any of his writings. His theory of motivation was much richer and more nuanced. And he really emphasized the fact that human development, human life is really more of like an experience. We usually go two steps forward in life and think that we're going ahead, and then a pandemic hits us and we move backwards, you know, like, you know, the best plans, you know. When we hung out in January 2020, did we ever think there would be a pandemic?
No, of global
proportions. Like, mm-hmm. like, it's just, it's unfathomable to think that, like, did we ever think, like, just in 2 months, the whole world.
Yeah, exactly.
Would, you know what I mean? It's so weird. Close. It's just so weird how, you know, it's just such an important life lesson, I think, you know, that, like, you know, you never know what's coming brewing down even just in the next couple of months. But so much of it is just choosing the growth option when you can, you know, being mindful, being just intensely aware of the preciousness and precariousness of human existence while you're engaging deeply in human existence. For me, it's just, you know, that's really what I get from Maslow, is, and it's different from like what a lot of other people how they've represented it, as though life is some sort of video game where once you reach a certain level of something, like if it's connection, then like you can move up and then never have to worry about connection again. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So yeah, my metaphor, so all that is just a precursor to say that I thought a sailboat is a better metaphor for life than a clunky pyramid. You know, with a sailboat, you go and you're in the wide, vast unknown of the sea, and at any time waves can come crashing down on us, but we still move towards our most valued direction, our most valued port. And the boat itself can have holes in it and can sink. So we have to certainly keep the basic needs met, for sure. So I agree with Maslow on that. You know, if you have no food, it's kind of hard to compose a symphony. But you know, as long as you have a stable and secure boat, you do have to open up that sail if you're going to move, right? If you're going to move and grow, you eventually have to open up that sail. There's just no denying it.
Yeah, there is almost like this aspect of you need a bit of courage to explore your potentials a bit more. You cannot just start climbing up to the next level, but you need to sort of develop yourself all the time and explore your needs more in depth. So that's what I really like about this model. So yeah, tell about this model, like concretely, like what does it entail? What does it have? What are the parts?
Yeah, so I view, like I was saying, the boat itself is stability, and the three needs that I include in the boat are the need for what are my needs? The need for safety, the need for connection, and the need for self-esteem. I think those three things really operate as a cycle, and they feed off each other in various ways. The more that you are safe and you feel safe in your environment, the more you feel like you can connect with others and you can trust others, the more you feel you can work on something that have self-esteem, that brings you a sense of self-esteem and makes you feel a sense of self-worth and competence for your life. But if any one of those things, the parts of the system isn't working, I mean, you feel like you're drowning, right? Like, let's say your work isn't going well. Let's say you feel incompetent, right? Like, then that affects the other two things, doesn't it? You don't feel safe anymore in your life. You don't feel as connected with others because your low self-esteem other people will pick up on it and they'll kind of run away because that's how humans are. Let's be honest about humans. Humans like a confident person, you know, like, so look, it's a shame. It's a shame, but it's the way it is. And so that's why I really want to help people kind of work on all three of those things at once, right? And have a really secure, safe boat. But eventually you do have to open up that sail, and if you're going to move, and the sail really is a vulnerable, it's also, you know, growth. That's where growth happens. And the main needs of growth, and according to my model, are the needs for exploration at its base. You're high in need for exploration. So that's a good one, you know, need for exploration to, like, you know, see the world, to be curious, to be creative. The need for love, which is a higher form of a higher need than the need for connection. It's I see love as different than connection. Love is more growth oriented, and then need for transcendence. Need for purpose. Yeah, thank you. Need for purpose. I see that as comprising the sale, those three needs. So the sale is growth, represents growth, and the boat represents security.
So this is a great metaphor, and this is the vehicle for transcendence. And can we just rewind back a bit and like really define what do you mean by transcendence? What is that? Is that something end state that we're trying to reach? Is that some feeling that we can feel? Is that when we grow? Like what is it concretely?
Earlier, I defined transcendence as being able to integrate your whole self and harmoniously so that you can have the most impact on society in a way that's synergistic. So Maslow adopted this term from the anthropologist Ruth Benedict, synergy. And the notion of synergy is how I see transcendence. It's having such a great connection to the world, a kind of a oneness with the world, that what is good for you is simultaneously and automatically good for the world. There's really the boundaries between self and world are very dissolved. To me, that's what I think healthy transcendence is. I call it healthy transcendence. It's better to me than a more like I said, that's a horizontal form of transcendence. But there are vertical forms of transcendence where you're like, I'm enlightened and you're not, you know. And it's like, and you know, you see this in yoga sometimes. You see it in, you know, various spiritual practices where the guru, you know, thinks they're like better than everyone, and so they like abuse their position of power and like molest everyone, you know. Like they're like they're like terrible things that people do in the name of being enlightened. And I don't want it to be like you know, I don't want transcendent. I think a really healthy form of transcendence is one, again, that is more about how are you showing up? How are you bringing your whole self to the table in a way that's just harmonious within yourself and harmonious with the world?
So like anyone can transcend in the life.
There might be a few people who are hoping for false causes. But
what kind of characteristics do we have to have, or do we need to work on this transcendence all the time, or are some people just naturally more transcendental?
I don't think we have to work on our transcendence all the time. But like I said, choosing growth can help get you there. I mean, choosing the growth option, choosing the things that will help you explore and connect and have love for and give to people that you don't even like, and then really staying true to your values and your core purpose, those things will allow transcendence to be more likely to emerge. But I want to make clear that transcendence is not the goal that you directly shoot for. A lot of problems in human history have happened because people have directly shot for transcendence. Transcendence, I see, is an emergent phenomenon based on growth, choosing the growth option and doing things that you're really deeply engaged in life and just being really fully engaged in life.
That's a great way to put it. I wanted to ask also, what is the difference between self-actualization and self-transcendence?
I've been asked that question before because it's a good question. See, in my definition of self-actualization, it's very close to transcendence. So I view self-actualization as creative self-actualization. To what extent are you actualizing your greatest creative potentials? You know, the potentials within you that allow you to be as generative as possible, that make you feel really most alive and productive and putting new things into being in the world. But this is an interesting idea. Maslow said that towards the end of his life, it was as though self-actualization's purpose or function was to erase itself eventually, that when done right, it's merely just a bridge to transcendence. I think there's something quite profound about that. I think that the order of operations is self-actualization, then transcendence. I think people who shoot for transcendence without self-actualizing really open themselves up to a lot of problems, you know, because they have not met some of their needs that have to be met first, that maybe they're using a lot of their needs as a prop. Their lack of needs as a prop, or using others as a prop to really fulfill those lower needs when in the name of transcendence. So self-actualization to me is really, I connect that with having your needs met and creatively feeling like you're actualized.
Let's talk about some of the needs that you think are essential for us to fulfill, to self-actualize, to grow, to transcend, or to... The needs. Do we have to like fulfill them, or what's the proper way to work on the needs that we have, the fundamental human needs?
Yeah, it's really important to recognize what needs are really deficient within you that you want to have to be higher. Not everyone has the same desire for the same level of needs. Some people might be higher in the need for exploration than someone else, and that's perfectly fine. And then throughout the course of our lives, we can ebb and flow in the extent to which different needs matter at different points in our lives and come into more prominence and don't. So, but I think having a real good awareness, understanding of where are you at, and you know, are you lonely? You know, is the need for connection too low? You know, and do you need to fill up that bucket, or do you need to fill up your purpose bucket? You know, maybe your connection is fine, but you kind of feel aimless, so you feel meaningless in life. And I mean, I couldn't say that any needs are more essential than others once we get, especially when we get outside of the boat, you know, and we open the sail. It's really so uniquely individualized to each person. You know, self-actualization is such an individualistic thing. Individualistic in the sense of it's not a purely individualistic endeavor. I mean, it's very important to self-actualize in relation to the world and in ways that will contribute to the world and working with others to do so. But it's very it's very idiosyncratic to each person, I think is what I'm trying to say. So every person, there's a unique sacredness to each person of their own sort of dreams and desires and goals. And I'm not big on saying what is most essential for everyone, but for you, you have to understand and figure out what are your greatest strengths, what are your highest motivations, and you know, how do you want to live your life so that your way of being is very much explorative and curious and moving towards that direction, that endpoint.
Okay, so identifying what bucket needs to be filled a bit more. So I would actually like to go into each individual needs and what do we have in this sailboat. And the first is the need for safety. And you talk about the attachment theory, that our childhood attachment determines our adulthood relationships and everything. And I think many of us have this image in mind that you're either very good at attachment or very insecurely attached. And that's like, if you're insecurely attached, you're screwed basically with your adulthood relationships. And you like talk about like, this is actually not the case. So can you talk a little bit about this?
Sure. There's actually a very, very low correlation between early childhood attachment style and patterns and adulthood attachment style and patterns. A lot of people think there's just this continuous thing that, you know, if your parents messed you up as children, that's it. Yeah, it's your destiny to always be insecure. I think that a lot matters and depends on your adult relationships and the extent to which your partners are sensitive to your biggest triggers. So people who are insecurely attached are not insecurely attached about everything in a relationship. There are some things they don't really care about. It's not that they don't get insecure about it. It's specifically very specific triggers that if there's an awareness there. So for the anxiously attached person, the triggers are like abandonment and signs from the partner that they're not, maybe not as interested in you anymore. You know, these kinds of things can be huge triggers when it comes to anxiously attached people. For people who are avoidantly attached, the triggers are different. They're that, you know, wow, the partner is suffocating them, or the partner is always constantly, you know, texting them or something. I don't know, you know, and then for the avoidantly attached person, that could be scary and triggers them. So I think, though, if you could just have partners and you can have better experiences with partners who are sensitive to those triggers, that are aware of them, and you can openly and honestly discuss them with your partner, I think that that can go a really long way, and you can reconfigure these patterns in your life. You really can retrain your brain in really, really beautiful ways.
You also talked about childhood trauma and how that can also foster resilience. Can you elaborate on how can actually something that we've experienced as a negative experience foster our growth?
That's it's a big topic, childhood trauma, and our early childhood experiences of unpredictability and insecurity, even abuse, can really cause our brains to wire in certain ways to address and to cope with the situation. It can really cause us to shut down and avoid anything that may resemble the original stimulus, and cause us as adults to never grow and to never choose that growth option. What I try to do in helping people with that have gone through trauma in their childhood is to recognize that fear learning and fear unlearning operate in different systems of the brain. You have to actively unlearn fears. You have to actively get to a point where you are you're moving towards new stimulus and not generalizing so much from your early childhood experiences to everyone. So for instance, if a young girl had bad experience with a man, they don't end up hating all men, you know, and exposure therapy, what's it like to talk to a man and for them to actually be kind and nice, you know, like, and then kind of changing your schema a little bit. It can happen all sorts of ways. A black person who faced racism with white people, and, you know, do they grow up hating all white people? You know, our brain does this thing of overgeneralizing very, very young. It's like we set up a weather forecast system when we're young, and our brain tries to predict and say, okay, well, this is what happened to you, so therefore this is the way the world is. The world is not safe. The world is this, the world is that. I think as adults, we have to actively really test these hypotheses more carefully and come to a more nuanced, mature, realistic view of human nature.
Does this relate to the fact that we have this plastic brain and neuroplasticity, and we can sort of rewire our brain to think differently?
It's related. Certainly. There's capacity for neuroplasticity, but also we do cement some things early in childhood that are very, very hard to change. Some people talk about neuroplasticity like it's just this like the brain is just clay and oh yeah, no problem, you go in there and just like I'll reconfigure that bit there and I'll put it there.
Yeah,
some of this stuff is more like cement that you have to, you really, really do a lot of psychological counseling and a lot of work on yourself. Because a lot of things in childhood, especially during these critical periods, rewires our brain in ways that are very, very, very rigid.
Yeah. So people also shouldn't feel bad about themselves if they actually need many years of, let's say, therapy work to overcome a trauma. Like, as you said, like some people might go just like, hey, neuroplasticity, just like change your brain. And it doesn't really work the way. Okay, that's a good elaboration. Thank you for that. The next need is connection. And you wrote that the need for connection to form and maintain at least a minimal number of positive, stable, intimate relationship. It's fundamental need that affects our whole being, permeating our entire suite of emotion, thoughts, and behaviors. That's like, wow, really spoke to me and really captures how fundamentally important social connection is. You even have a headline, loneliness kills. And so now I would like to ask specifically about like two things that I've been thinking about. One is social media and the second is the pandemic. Like, how do these things affect or relate our feeling of connections? For example, let's say first the social media. There is almost warning headlines everywhere all the time, like, oh, social media is bad and it reduces our social connectedness. And is it always like that? Like, can it be a good thing as well?
But certainly nothing is always like anything. And I think that social media, I've talked to people about this who are more expert than I am on it, and they really are kind of critical of the extent to which social media can rewire our brains in ways that make us very dependent on the reward incentives and the intermittent reward. It's very tied to dopamine. It's very tied to the fact that sometimes you get likes, sometimes you get some criticism. Everything's kind of designed to kind of keep you coming back, like a gambling machine. I think that if you use it like Inca uses it, it can be very beneficial. You know, I see you over there, you know, like giving great information to people, right? Like you post things on Instagram that are knowledge and information. I imagine that gives you a sense of meaning. And it helps people learn things. Look, I think that's a great use of social media. So I don't think that it's all negative, but I think it's the extent to which, you know, you can go on there to do what you want to do that's meaningful and have the willpower to disengage from it when you don't want to get sucked into a rabbit hole of darkness.
Yeah. So basically, I'm getting that social media cannot that well satisfy our need for a real, actual human connection, like person-to-person human connection.
That too, yeah. I didn't even say that, but that's true. You know, I don't think it's a substitute for real person connection. I think that a lot of things on social media really are for the need for self-esteem to be satisfied, not the need for connection. I really believe that to be true.
Could it be also for purpose?
Yeah. And that's why, isn't that how you do it? Yeah. Right. And, or me, I know in my social media account, I try to say things that are in line with my purpose, and it can be a great way to express. It can be a great way for creative self-actualization. Especially TikTok, you know, when I do my hip hop dance videos on TikTok, I think
those are great. Yeah,
I'm really, really living my purpose.
Good. Okay. What about these?
You saw them?
Yeah, I've seen the dance videos. You also reposted some of them to Instagram. So ridiculous. I think you were even cited somewhere that you're a hip hop dancer. Some Wikipedia article or somewhere.
That's so true.
There is a good like career option if you ever get bored with psychology. What about this pandemic? Do you think, like, I know it's a bit like difficult to say how it affects, but can it like somehow reduce our ability to foster growth because we are not having that many options to connect?
I think that there's various ways of looking at the situation. Actually, I have my 10th book coming out this year, on a workbook for post-traumatic growth to really help people during this time. And I think there's different ways of viewing the situation. Sometimes narrowing options in life is actually much, much more meaningful and conducive to growth than having many, 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 many different potential options on the table and being able to go anywhere, do anything. For some people, this pandemic has allowed them to reprioritize themselves and their goals and the people that they want in their, that they truly want in their life in a way that allows them to focus and create more meaning out of the situations. So I don't think it's all bad that, you know, I think that it's almost like taboo to say. It's like it's in favor to complain all the time. You know, people like complaining, but I think that while there are people have very legitimate complaints, I don't mean to diminish their complaints. I will say that there's often in all of us ways of reframing our current reality once we realize that and we break free from our old patterns and our old ways of expectations. Once we can really just see things for where we are right now, sometimes that can actually afford us opportunities for growth and ways of adding increased meaning in our lives, maybe focusing on one or two people in your life as opposed to maybe before you had like 50 people, you know, like, you know, snip, snip, a couple of those people out of your life. And maybe you suddenly have more meaning in your life. You know, I talk to my mom more now than I ever did. Yeah. My parents and my dad as well, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm closer to them than I've ever been. And I never had time for them. Now I'm like, well, I got time. What am I doing? It's a pandemic.
Yes, I actually feel that I have the similar kind of experiences, although this has many negative sides at the pandemic. I also feel that it has brought a certain depth of meaning into certain relationships of mine. And also just being able to talk about this, like shared fear or anxiety or whatever over the situation has made some of my relationships a lot meaningful and deeper and more sort of real and authentic.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
There can be some positives as well, which is good. Okay, next need is self-esteem. So with this one, I wanted to talk a little bit about the topic of ego. There is so much ego like discussion at the moment going on, like lose your ego or work on being less egoistic or... And then there is the need of self-esteem, like that's an actual need. Can you clarify what is meant by that we need that self-esteem and do we need to lose the ego? Do we need to work on not having an ego? How does it go?
It's all about having a healthy self-esteem where your ego isn't driving all of your decisions. I just define the ego as the parts of yourself that have the incessant need to be seen in a positive light at all times, to always be feel as though you're great. When you have that incessant need, you really aren't growing, because I guarantee you, you aren't great all the time. Not just you, Inka, but I mean, no one is great all the time, right? It's just you're human. And I think that healthy self-esteem is one where you feel a basic sense of self-worth and you feel like you're enough. Yeah, you're not necessarily you're greater than everyone or the best, but you're enough. And you feel a sense of competency. You feel a sense of real being able to reach your goals in life and in really meaningful ways. You're the author of your own life, and you feel a healthy sense of pride for what you're doing, and you feel authentic. To me, that's a healthy form of self-esteem. It's great when you can do all that. And you can do all that without being narcissistic. You really can.
Yeah, you have also done research on actual narcissism and the light and dark triad of personalities and what kind of narcissism is sort of pathological and what kind of ego or self-esteem, what is the healthy way? Can you talk about the light and dark triad of personality?
Sure. The light triad is a counterpart to the dark triad, which has existed for 20, 30 years in the personality psychology literature, which people who are very narcissistic and Machiavellian, manipulative, and are psychopaths. They're always lying and have lots of callousness. The late triad was an attempt to figure out what are people on who have a more pro-social, benevolent orientation toward others in the world. And we found three main factors: faith in humanity and having a lot of belief that humans are basically good at the end of the day, and treating people with dignity and respect, and in individuals, and people, treating people as individuals. So that's humanism. And the opposite of Machiavellianism, which we called Kantianism for nerdy philosophical reasons, which I won't get into, but Kantianism and his moral imperative is treat people as ends in themselves, not as means to an end. You know, treat people as, you know, I'm not trying to get anything out of them. Right? I'm not trying to get anything out of Inca, right? I'm not trying to manipulate her. I just fascinated with her being, you know, like just, I'm curious. And, you know, and having that kind of curiosity about people, even if you're not getting anything out of them, you know, is, we see that as a real nice counterpart to the dark triad.
Mm-hmm. And how does these triads relate to self-transcendence?
It's actually, I mean, in terms of empirically, the light triad is very strongly correlated with measures of self-transcendence. People who are score higher on our light triad measures, which, by the way, all your listeners can take the test for free and find out where they are in the light versus dark triad if they go to selfactualizationtests.com. We have found that those who tend to score higher in the light triad tend to report more awe experiences in their lives. They tend to report more connections, more experiences of love, more exploration. We have such a wide range of growth-oriented outcomes. We looked at what we found were very strongly correlated with the light triad and very negatively correlated with the dark triad. You can absolutely be a psychopath. Anyone can be a psychopath. I believe in that, but it's just, is that really the best way to live one's life? Is that, I can't answer that for everyone. I'm not telling how people should live their lives. But I think the science is clear that on what the probabilities are, the probabilities of what kind of outcome of life you're going to have. You'll probably be constantly dissatisfied and unhappy.
Can we choose? Are these traits something that we choose or we are born with? Are they genetic? Are they something that we can work on?
Good question. It's everything is a combination of nature and nurture. Some people are dispositionally sunny. Some people are dispositionally grumpy. But even the grumpiest of the grumpiest can learn strategies and techniques to lighten their soul a bit. And even those who are chronically optimistic can learn how to be a little more realistic sometimes as well. I think that personality change is possible. I wrote an article for The Atlantic called Can Personality Be Changed? And I reviewed that literature and concluded that even though genetically there are some influences on our behaviors and our personality, if we change our patterns over time willfully and intentionally, we can in essence change our personalities in very dramatic ways.
What do you think are the best ways of working on personality?
Well, if you want to change something about your personality, like let's say you're introverted and you want to be more extroverted, or you're neurotic and you want to be less neurotic, well, it's the same thing with any other goal you have in life. Goal setting is very, very important. Setting the intention, making the visualizing the outcome, realizing and figure out a way of quantitatively tracking your progress over time, being able to keep people accountable, getting outside your comfort zone. I mean, you know, you can do it. You can do it. But it takes, you know, like learn about the science of goal setting, goal motivation. It's just like anything else that you're trying to change in your life. You want to diet, you want to go on a diet, you know? There's a very set of principles, which I talk about in the purpose chapter, SMART goals, setting SMART goals. SMART is an acronym, you know, making sure it's very specific. Like I want to be able to, you know, something more specific than just, I want to be more extroverted. If you're an introvert, it's like set specific goals. Like this year, I want to be able to talk to strangers more, and I want to talk to being, then get even more specific. So set out a goal, like this week, I'm going to approach two strangers on the street and ask them how they're doing. You know, like just like set very specific goals for yourself that don't seem so impossible. But over time, what you're doing is you're changing your habits, you know, but baby steps. People really underestimate the extent to which baby steps can over time cause accrue to really big changes in one's life.
That's a great advice. The purpose chapter was definitely one of my favorite chapters as well, to define what brings meaning to your life, what is your purpose. As I've understood, the purpose can be different for us all, and we all need to find the meaning and the purpose. Most important for us to feel this like well-being and satisfaction in life.
I agree, and you know, our purpose can change over time. Our purpose throughout our lives, we may have, like, I have some purpose that I had maybe 20 years ago that I don't really even remember what it is now. You know, we need to be open as well to life changing and to our goals, our highest goals changing, but being in touch with our highest goals. Actually, I'm not a good example because my purpose, life purpose, has been consistent since the age of two. but for most people,
what is it? What's the purpose of Scott Berry Kaufman's life?
Well, unlock the human potential of those who we've written off. Yeah, and well, of everyone, but particularly the underdogs. Yeah.
Mm. And you've definitely done a lot of great things in that field and in that space. So
yeah.
So you are definitely living your life purpose. Sure. And I think this book, like, if for anyone who wants more meaning and purpose to their lives, like, your book is actually a great way to start. You also have a course on transcendence. People can join, and actually wanted to ask then, so just to revise, the last three needs is exploration, love, and purpose, which we talked about a little bit, and then comes a transcendence, which is, as you said, this unity and integration and feeling to like a greater commitment sort of to your surroundings and integrating with the society and integrating with everything around you, merging, yes, like unity. So for someone listening who are thinking about transcendence and would like more meaning and growth and finding some depth in life, what are the concrete steps that we can do right now? Reading your book would be a good start, of course. And
read the one coming out this year in September, because it's a workbook. But there are a lot. I mean, there are lots of things that one can do. That's why we put together a workbook for this year. A lot of it is really a self-examination. Really being honest with yourself and honest with your traits and having acceptance of your whole self, not just the parts of you that you like best, but the whole self, but as a route to growth. So determining and really consciously becoming aware of which sides of yourself have the greatest creative aliveness potential. You know, what can you actualize within you that makes you feel most alive, vital, and fulfilled, and not negotiating on those things, making those things the cornerstone of your life. A lot of people do a lot of things that other people expect of them, and they think that they need to do in order to please others. But so much of self-actualization is designing a life that works for you and owning it. And I'm really excited about creating a new coaching program, self-actualization coaching, that will be exactly this. We're creating a training program for aspiring self-actualization coaches to be able to have their whole business where they have clients and they help their clients design a life that's best for them. I wish people good luck on this journey and to have the self-acceptance and self-compassion along the way to realize that it's a lifelong journey and it never ends until you have your last breath.
Thank you so much. And when people want to find more information about the self-transcendence and your books and courses, where should they go to seek it?
Oh, thanks for asking. Well, I host something called the Psychology Podcast. So I do the podcast and you can find out everything pretty much at scottbarrykaufman.com, including the podcast stuff, but also humanpotential.co. Humanpotential.co is the website for my Center for the Science of Human Potential, which I started during the pandemic. That didn't exist, back when we talked in 2019, 2020, that didn't exist yet. But just in the past year and a half or so, I created the Center for the Science of Human Potential. Did you know that, Inka?
No, actually I didn't, but I'm gonna check after we've stopped the recording.
I'm excited to tell you about it. So anyway, hey, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a real honor, and I wish your own podcast a lot of success and know how it can help.
Thank you so much, Scott, for this interview. It has been very inspiring.
Thank you for listening to the Mind and Psychology podcast today. I'd love to hear what really spoke to you in today's episode, so let me know in the YouTube comments in youtube.com/@IamIngaLand. If you want to learn more about the topics of mind and psychology, subscribe to YouTube and Apple Podcasts to stay up to date on new episodes. Have a good day and see you next week at the same place.